Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world still employed by the Chicago White Sox. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Just kidding. The White Sox do not pay our salaries.
No, they don't. But, you know, Jake, we're still also living off the glory of our younger years. 2005 was a great year for Jake and Jordan. I mean, rolling into fifth grade, feeling good, full class clown mode. All was well in 2005. And hopefully that legacy will keep us around for the next 18 years.
That's the dream. One can only hope. Yes, everybody, we will be talking about the Chicago White Sox decision, their stunning decision to relieve general manager Rick Hahn and vice president of everything, Ken Williams, of their duties yesterday. The two had been around basically for over two decades. We will get to that. We will talk the Washington Nationals. Ooh. Question mark, question mark, question mark. An update on Wander Franco. The Yankees are going for an L10. Trout is back and it doesn't matter. And a special guest, Steven Nelson, the broadcaster for the Los Angeles Dodgers, will be joining us to explain how the Dodgers are getting away with it yet again.
Yes, but also how they just lost to Noah Syndergaard on Tuesday night. But for the most part, things are going well in Dodger Town, and we are going to get to all that with Nelly later. But let's begin with the biggest news. As you mentioned, Jake, the White Sox have done it. The fans on the South Side have been crying for this for, I mean, I guess longer than really any other fan base with regards to their front office. And that is, and as we always like to talk about, the term relieving of their duty. And this is not a poop joke. I mean, it's specifically related to this actually might be some level of relief for certainly the fans, but even for Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, who I would bet, Jake, that there have been times over the last however many years that they have thought, yeah, I'm getting fired. And yet they have made it all the way to this point. A strange time to finally be told, sorry, that's enough. After they conducted yet another draft, after they conducted a massive franchise-altering trade deadline. But for whatever reason, Cal Raleigh's two home runs on Monday night and Josh Rojas kicking their ass was enough to send 87-year-old Jerry Reinsdorf to invite Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams into his office and say, no mas.
Do we think he fired them together in person? Do you think it was meeting with Kenny, meeting with Rick, meeting with both of them? Or was it everybody in one? Like, Jerry Reinsdorf clearly had been building up the courage for 20 years to let these guys go. So maybe he only had one blast of you fired.
This is a good transition to some reporting from Bob Nightingale, which came out this morning.
That's actually the name of my new band.
Exactly.
Some reporting from Bob Nightingale.
Sign me. Are they on Spotify yet? I am pretty sure, based on what Bob reported, and this is important to know. I know that we've made fun of Bob. Bob has his quirks for sure in his syntax and his tweets and whatever. But
And his flaws
for sure in the report when it comes to reporting news that is fact and fiction, whatever. But the truth is that Bob is plugged in with the White Sox. That has been true for a long time. If you go back and think about any really significant White Sox trade or signing he has gotten at first, that is not an accident. It seems like he has a pretty close connection with Jerry Reinsdorf, or at least someone in the White Sox knows what's going on. And so when he reported this morning that apparently three interesting details. One, he actually made this decision a week ago. Okay, and wanted to give them one last chance, which again, at this point, I don't know. You've already traded all away your good players. You're trying to lose, so I don't know what he wanted to see. But apparently, he decided a week ago, and apparently, it was two separate office invites, according to Nightingale. But then the other thing, which is bigger picture, is that Bob says fairly definitively that he expects farm director Chris Getz to be promoted from within to be the GM. And the other wild thing in this story, which I'm not even sure you saw this yet, is they're also planning to bring in someone from the outside, Jake. Now, since you didn't see this yet. Oh, do you have a guess? This is good. I don't believe you've seen this yet, so this is a fun game.
Oh, there's a specific name.
There's a specific name that Nightingale has reported as likely being brought in to work with Chris Getz, okay? And it is, But any
Tony La Russa. Tony
okay,
La Russa.
Okay, so Tony. So I'm glad you mentioned Tony La Russa. This is also some part of the reporting that Tony La Russa is apparently back with the White Sox in a consulting manner. Tony La Russa has been undergoing cancer treatments apparently for the last year or so, and is not doing so well, and is not looking obviously a non-position to manage, but is apparently still one of Jerry's right-hand men. So he is involved still in this search. But the man, the name that was reported, is Dayton Moore. Jake, yes, Dayton Moore, who apparently has history with Chris Getz from Kansas City. Of course, Kansas City has produced a World Series championship more recently than the White Sox.
If I'm Jerry Reinsdorf, I'm looking across the division and I'm saying, oh, yeah.
Who's doing it right?
I like what's going on at Kauffman Stadium. I like what's up with the Kansas City Royals. I like how things are going over there. They just lost two in a row to the A's.
The Royals. Let's
copy and paste.
So Dayton Moore, of course, who was fired by Kansas City last year, who's now recently been working in Texas, I believe, as like a, you know, special assistant to whatever. He, you know, to in fairness to Jerry, the Royals have won a World Series more recently than all the other teams in the division. I know Cleveland came off and awfully close. Minnesota certainly hasn't won anything in the playoffs. But anyway, bro, the point is
Jordan, 2015 yeah. might as well be 1905 as far as talking, the game has changed.
Yes, but the whole reason we're here is because they've been treating 2005 like 2015. So 2015 feels like yesterday. So anyway, the point is, that is the reporting we have from Bob this morning. And that is a good way to zoom out and to think about, okay, how are White Sox fans probably feeling?
Before we do that, Jordan, yeah. I would like to just give some neutrals who maybe don't follow the White Sox a brief timeline, if that's okay. Please.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in 1992, Kenny Williams gets hired by the team after he's done with his playing career. Over the 90s, he kind of works his way up the ladder in baseball operations and becomes the general manager in 2000. The team then hires Rick Hahn in 2002. He's like a hotshot GM. Like, everyone's trying to hire Rick Hahn. And Rick Hahn's like, I love it here. I'm staying, motherfuckers. Those two run the team in tandem from 2002 when Hahn gets there to yesterday. Yesterday, in 2012, ahead of the 2013 season, Rick Hahn becomes GM. Kenny Williams gets promoted to executive vice president of whatever the hell. And that was the status quo heading into yesterday. And so the level of stasis over the last two decades is a very important thing to know when we consider Chris Getz, who is already the, I believe, director of player development. Mm-hmm. Or assistant GM of player development with the White Sox, where hiring someone internal is not necessarily a fresh start. And that is why I is the last thing. Mm-hmm. No shade to Chris Getz, who might be a smart baseball person who's maybe being stymied by the vision above him. I don't know. It's just I maintain a level of skepticism, as does, I would imagine, White Sox fans. Where as long as Jerry Reinsdorf is sitting atop the pyramid, there is not a lot of reason to believe things are going to change. Mm-hmm. At the same time, that an 87-year-old, famously loyal and stubborn owner woke up over the last week, looked at his organization, took a little peep, opened his eyes, and said, we need change, some sort of change. After 22 years, is notable and tells me it must be a shit show over there.
Yeah.
Where if he did not make a change after like the Drake LaRoche kerfuffle and
so many
Chris
times.
Sale cut, there's so many other insane things that have happened to the White Sox over the last 20 years. And that this was the final straw tells us it's nutso over there.
And there was, you know, yesterday they lose again, and Eloy Jimenez is asked afterwards, because of course for the last few weeks we've been talking about White Sox clubhouse culture. Forget the roster construction and the direction of the franchise, which is clearly why you fire Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams. But this is related to clubhouse culture, and now once you trade all your pitching and everything, like you've clearly signaled to the franchise, to the team, you're not intent on winning this season. That's fine. But when they ask Eloy Jimenez after the game, like, has anyone stepped up to talk about leadership? And he's like, no. They cut to the post game, and our friend Chuck Garfine and Ozzy Guillen, of course, just like crush Eloy and crush. And they're saying, like, this is the whole problem. This is the whole problem. And that's all true, right? But this is the thing. When you let this kind of leadership go on for so long, when you have this much stagnant kind of energy, there's so much wrong, right? It can't just be one thing or one guy. You can't pin it on this one guy who's not hustling, or one guy who's not trying hard, or one guy who's not being a leader. It's everybody. At the same time, to your point, it still goes back to the top. So I agree with you. It is wild that they seemingly, reportedly, are going to stay internal. Maybe Chris Getz can't turn it around. I can understand if you're Jerry Reinsdorf thinking, I need someone younger. I need a former player who played recently, and that is Chris Getz. We have seen a wave of more former players kind of elevating to GM roles to varying degrees of success. So I think that is an interesting trend. But if we're bringing in Dayton Moore, I mean, again, like, it's just like, oh, that is, all of that tells me that, again, this is so much with the ownership, is that they just want to oftentimes get someone that they have a vision of. It doesn't matter what you can tell them, right? This has been the problem in Colorado, is that Dick Monfort doesn't know anybody else. That's why he's kept staying internal. And so when you look around, there's very few teams left that have stuck with the same group or same people for this long. It's really just now the Yankees, right? Obviously. The A's, David Forst has been there for about 20 plus years, but that's a whole different situation. And now that's kind of the end of the list in terms of, you know, groups of front office people that have been around all the way back to the beginning. We're going to talk about Mike Rizzo and the Nats, who have a long history too, here in a second. But like, it's a short list now. And so that really, you know, kind of goes to show you. And oftentimes those, besides the Yankees, although they're certainly in an interesting spot now, this is what's so wild. Kenny Williams says, we've underperformed. This is what happens. I'm like, this is what should have happened many, many, many times over the last 7 years. Like, yes, technically you're right. This is what happens. But think about how far past we are. This is what happens.
I think you're reading it wrong, Jordan. He goes, we underperformed. This is what happens?
Question mark.
This is so the true consequences of my actions? Oh, this wait, is what? Me reaping what I sowed?
Yeah. So we'll see.
My last point, though. Yeah. Let me make one final point. Mm-hmm. As a non-White Sox fan, I've been talking to people around the game about this. As a follower of the sport, I need irrational actors to stay and survive in our game. I do not want 30 intelligent, in quotation marks,
agreed,
beat bop, boot bopping organizations that are all hyper efficient and are doing every single thing correctly all the time. Mm-hmm. Right? I want 10 weirdos, mm-hmm, just making odd choices.
Yes.
People living in the past, people, mm-hmm, blinded by their own hubris. Mm-hmm. And I need that. So my hope as a non-White Sox fan, and I'm sorry, White Sox fans, I hope they hire Dayton Moore.
Yeah.
I hope they stay internal. Mm-hmm. I hope Jerry Reinsdorf lives till he's 150. Okay. And that the White Sox never freaking change. Okay? And I hope the franchise stumbles onto some glory in that time. I don't wish pain.
That does happen sometimes.
It does happen.
You can still win even despite all those stupid stuff. Yeah.
But from a flavor perspective, I love this flavor. Mm-hmm. Fires me up.
It is just a wild thing. You think back to 5 years ago, I found a tweet from the summer of 2017 from MLB Pipeline. And it was like 25% of the top 100 list is White Sox and Braves prospects. It was like, ooh, because it was those two. For that stretch there from like 17, 18, as they made the first rebuild, made all those trades, and the Braves had Acuna and Albies and all these guys coming up, it was those two were so far ahead of everybody else in terms of prospects. And for a second, it looked like the White Sox were actually building towards something pretty exciting. Like,
womp, womp.
Yeah, and then here we are. All right, anyway, let's move on to another. So there's plenty more White Sox. This will be a fascinating story, certainly in the offseason. More trades they're going to make. Are they really going to hire Dayton Moore? All these things. Okay, we'll get to that. Let's move to another team that has been a lot, largely the same for a long time. That is the Washington Nationals. With news coming out of the last few days, they have extended manager Davey Martinez for another 2 years. With reporting and expectations that the Lerner family was exploring selling the team over the last few years, which has since subsided, seemingly, to some degree, many people assumed that when a new owner would come in, they would try to refresh the front office as well, as the Nationals had become one of the worst teams in baseball the last few years with a desolate farm system. And they decided, we need something new. We need something fresh. We need, you know, some Ivy League dork to come in here and revitalize this group. Instead, because the Nationals have been playing incredible baseball for about 2 months now, and Davey Martinez is still the guy that, you know, was the manager when they won the World Series, they've decided to extend Davey Martinez. There are reports that they are also exploring extending Mike Rizzo. Here's where I stand on this. First of all, it has been very fun to watch the Nationals this season. There are still a lot of questions about the direction of their franchise on a macro level in terms of player development, in terms of player acquisition, in terms of drafting. However, to see what they have become this season, which is not just a frisky bad team, but a team where some of those young players that they have traded for and counted on have looked pretty damn good. CJ Abrams and Kaybert Ruiz have both been excellent in the second half. Mackenzie Gore has looked very good. Josiah Gray has looked very good. Like, those things have looked good. Those are feathers in Mike Rizzo's cap. However, if you talk to people around the game about what the Nationals are still, what their reputation still is in terms of drafting and developing players from within, not trading, they are still light years behind everybody else. And so that is why I do wonder if Mike Rizzo really is the best guy to lead this team moving forward. I can understand the Lerners getting swept up in how this rebuild has looked so far, but I think it is a bit of a cautionary tale to go, as we've seen with the White Sox, to commit too much to the guy that gave you the World Series and go forward. I'm fine with the Davey thing. I don't think that makes that big of a difference as far as a two-year deal. You're not saying he's your manager forever. I think that's fine. But I think that this could, and maybe they don't extend Rizzo, we'll see. But I think that this is a little delicate here.
Vehemently disagree.
Oh, you said bring, well, is it because of everything you just said?
Yeah.
About, okay. So you already made the same point. So you just want the Nationals to be living off this forever. And hey, like, maybe that's fine. I know that there are a lot of people in the Nationals that sure are, can understandably be loyal. 2019 is a lot more recent than 2015 or 2005. But I don't know. I mean, maybe there's a version where Mike Rizzo sees that there needs to be change around him and bring in more around him. And yeah, there's been some signs of that. So maybe there's hope there. I'm not saying that this would be a complete downright disaster. I just think that there's maybe some concerns there.
I have an idea.
All right, let's hear it.
Assistant General Manager Scott Boris.
Mm. I mean, we're basically already there, right?
That's what I'm saying. Make it official.
Okay. You know,
hire Boris. The two of them run the Nats for the next 5 years together. A dream fulfilled.
Isn't this I know this is already sort of true with baseball, but isn't this like a thing in the NBA where, like, we've seen agents become general managers? Like, I think that has actually happened. Obviously, we saw it with Brody. That went super well. So does Boris aspire to do that? Because as far as I'm concerned, Boris views himself as the shadow GM for multiple teams, and that's cooler than doing it for one team.
Yeah, but he only cried for one team, and that was the Washington Nationals. We have Steven Nelson on to talk about the Dodgers, let's provide a quick Wander Franco update. Mm-hmm. Wander, who is currently under investigation in the Dominican Republic for alleged misbehavior with underaged girls. He was moved from the restricted list to administrative leave over the last few days. And the reason that that's important is because he goes from the Tampa Bay Rays problem to MLB's problem. And so now his future is under... Control is the wrong word, but it's basically under MLB's thumb. Wander's visual presence around Tropicana Field and Rays world as a whole has become very diminished over the past week. Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times reported they're taking Wander's picture down from inside the ballpark, and he's not on any of the ads anymore on the broadcast, and his presence is just slowly being taken away, as it should be.
Yes.
Okay? Nothing is definitive. It's still going to take a long time for all of this to play out, but the upshot here is do not expect Wander Franco back this season.
No.
And not for a pretty long time.
At the yeah, I mean, I think that we already sort of assumed we would not see him again this season, but this is, we really don't have that much more information besides this move to the administrative leave list. So this is going to be, unfortunately, certainly a story that we will be tracking in the offseason. I doubt we'll be getting much more updates before then, but, you know, this is obviously upsetting, and any more reporting we're going to get from this is going to be troubling and disappointing, obviously. I will say, he is gone, and now Wander Franco, who was their best player, is not on the team. And the Rays have Oslavis Basabe, who comes up and hits a grand slam last night for his first home run, and they're probably going to be fine. They've played well without Wander, and it's a good reminder that they'll be probably just fine without him. But
there was a quote from Christian Betancourt about it that I thought was interesting, mm-hmm. where he said, yeah, we've barely even thought about it, mm-hmm. which on one hand, I don't believe, mm-hmm. because a top 10 player in the world and someone your franchise gave $200+ million to may never play again for your team is the type of thing I would talk about with my teammates, right? If I was on the team. But at the same time, it confirms some of the things that I've heard about how Wander was perceived within that clubhouse mm-hmm. by a lot of different people, mm-hmm. where, yes, he was viewed as a vital member of the lineup or the defense or whatever, but he was not particularly well-liked within that room. Mm-hmm. And so the players, like Betancourt's quotes are more like, yeah, whatever. Like we have 26 other people here and we're trying to win a World Series. Like we're trucking forward and whatever, yeah. And that part of it, I do believe.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, we've had to deal with a lot of really upsetting off the field stories involving players that are now not playing anymore. And a theme has been, yeah, I mean, the teammates are the ones left to answer questions about it. And that's often not fair. And they're not, you know, responsible for that and whatever. So, but they have no choice, and the Rays have a great team anyway, and they're going to probably move forward and be just fine. All right, Jake, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we will have a special guest, Steven Nelson, one of the great voices of the Los Angeles Dodgers, to tell us why they're just going to win a billion games again. All right, the Dodgers. We'll be right back with Steven Nelson.
This is Bob Kendrick, president of the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum and host of Black Diamonds, a SiriusXM podcast. On this week's all-new episode, I'm talking baseball history with 1968 world champion Willie Horton.
My first 5 years with the Tigers, I couldn't ride no taxis. I couldn't eat with the white players. You learn a good lesson from the Negro League.
Download Black Diamonds right now on the SXM app, available with all trials and popular plans or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we have a very special guest, Steven Nelson, a broadcaster for the Los Angeles Dodgers and 8,000 other things. Hello, Steven. How are you?
Friends, first and foremost, we have some mazels to hand out to the both of you, because since we've last gathered in this digital podcast setting, one of you got engaged and the other got married. So first and foremost, congratulations to you and yours. And,
thank you, Steven.
It's beautiful.
It's very kind of you. I will say it's been interesting, like, you know, going to the Reds Blue Jays over the weekend. People that I didn't think knew I got married were like, hey, congrats. It's like, oh, okay, thank you.
The funny thing is, for me, people coming up to me and congratulating Jordan about getting married.
Yes. Hey, will you let Jordan know? Just let him know. I mean, that's when you guys are as perpetually online as you've been now for the last decade, you know, people know you. People know you.
It's fine. I'm not complaining. It's been very nice.
Nelly, didn't you have another kid?
I did.
Sick, dude.
Thank you.
So yeah. I guess we got to reciprocate the mazels.
Or maybe it's condolences for no sleep for the rest of your life. Yeah. But you know, that's what these road trips for the Dodgers are, a godsend, and my wife issues a stern warning every time I depart for one, said you better get the best sleep of your entire life, because once you get home, you are having now two handoffs.
Right. That makes a lot of sense.
Gotta wear that.
So Nelly, before we hop into the Los Angeles Dodgers, and we promise listeners that we will talk about the team that is very good. You grew up and a White Sox fan, and you maintain a shred of your White Sox fandom. You, like us, have struggled to leave that behind as you've climbed up in the baseball world.
Yeah.
Now, with all the White Sox things that happened yesterday, we have already talked about them on the podcast. Here's my question for you. I want you to describe how you are feeling right now in one word. If you could pick a single word in the English language to describe how your White Sox fandom is moving and vibing on this beautiful Wednesday morning, what would it be? And then, once you say the word, I will not ask you anything else about the Chicago White Sox.
So just a one-word answer?
One-word answer. Give me like pretend like you're a baseball player after a tough outing.
This is some deeply troubling role playing. Empty.
Great. Okay, so let's move on to the Los Angeles Dodgers. Jordan?
Yeah, let's I am very curious where Nelly is feeling today, but you are here to talk about the Dodgers and we can ask you about the White Sox.
Yeah, let's go from one deeply unserious organization to one at the other end of the spectrum,
yes,
please.
The most serious in many respects. The Dodgers, despite being defeated by the guy that lost them a bunch of games earlier in this season and Noah Syndergaard last night, are generally playing extremely good baseball. They are 76-48, a record that the White Sox surely have aspired many times to be over the last 18 years since winning the World Series, but instead have come nowhere close to that. Steven Nelson, now that you have been one of the voices of the Dodgers and around this team, of course, you've been on MLB Network and following this team from a distance like we have as they have ascended to the top of baseball over the last decade. Now that you get to actually see it on a almost daily basis, what have you come to understand and appreciate about what makes this machine go?
That's an awesome question, because I've sort of, from afar, you see the decade of dominance that they've enjoyed in Los Angeles, and you're just kind of like, oh, okay, like it's just the Dodgers, right? And you come to now expect this, but I think kind of double dutching into the organization for the first time this year and getting to meet all the people behind the scenes that make it work from kind of top to bottom, you're like, oh wow, this is like truly a machine, to use your word, because I think it appropriately and perfectly describes the operation from a baseball standpoint. I mean, there is not like a single stone left unturned any day of the year, which is why they're so good. And it's just kind of dizzying. You're like, this doesn't make sense how efficient this operation is. So I think it has enhanced the appreciation that I had working outside the organization and covering them at the network. It's just now it's like, okay, this is real. This is not just like an accident that things are happening for this team every year.
How does the inevitability of the Los Angeles Dodgers impact the way you call games? Because if you were calling games for a team that was always finding a way to drop the chili on itself, you would probably handle that differently than a team that is always finding a way, MacGyvering itself into victories.
No, there's definitely a Thanosian element to the Dodgers. And it definitely makes the job more fun. Calling wins is more fun. Like there's just no way around that fact. And so when you show up at the park and, you know, the first pitch is thrown and you're now in the thick of a game, and even if the team falls down, you know that they have the most two out, like there's two outs or two strikes in innings. They have the most two out runs in all of baseball. So a rally could happen at any moment. They have, I've lost track of how many comeback wins they have. So it's even when they're losing, the expectation is maybe they'll win again. And so it definitely, you know, gives you more energy. You know, the vibes floor is a lot of teams' ceiling.
Yes.
You know, we don't have our great friend Sarah Langs with us, though. But we have to talk about vibes. And so, yeah, the vibes floor for the Dodgers is higher than many team ceilings. And so again, I don't take that for granted doing this job. That is like a very fortunate thing to be able to say. So
do the players, like if I was on the, like there's a different set of expectations. So if the Pirates, no shade, win four in a row, the vibes mm-hmm. are probably immaculate in their clubhouse. Yeah. If the Dodgers win four in a row, the expectation in that room is that they win four in a row. So it does, like, I would imagine it doesn't really get like hooting and hollering in the same way that it would elsewhere because they expect to be great.
It stands to reason that that would be right. But with this particular group, this is a group that really does, I think, savor everything differently and together. And that is why you're now hearing Dave Roberts talk publicly. He's been saying it, you know, privately amongst the team, hey, this is my favorite group that I've ever had. And now he's publicly saying that. And a lot of the players are saying this is a really special group. No player is ever going to take that stance because, you know, every year and every team is different and they're all brothers and they love, you know, you can't pick your favorite kid, right, of all the teams you've been on. But there is a sense among this team that the energy, the chemistry, the cohesiveness, I mean, to steal a line that Mookie Betts used earlier this year, just a bunch of homies who play baseball together and they play for each other. And so because of the standard of winning the organization has set for itself the last 10 plus years, you would think like a 4-game win streak doesn't mean as much to this group. I feel it does. They really do enjoy being around each other.
Well, and the most important part obviously is that Mookie and Freddie are two of the best players in the world. Like that's the most important. But I will say it does feel like from a distance, and it seems like you can verify this from up close, they are now both very comfortable as Dodgers. And that was not necessarily the case initially for Freddie, obviously. And then even Mookie, even winning the World Series so quickly, you know, it took a little bit of time. But now that those two are so obviously the guys and two clear, obvious MVP candidates on top of that, it seems like it flows from them because, you know, even last year, as great as Freddie still was, he wasn't fully there yet, I felt like. So is that fair to say?
Totally. Two thoughts come to mind there. First and foremost, like it's their clubhouse now.
Yeah.
Like they're the guys, you know, there was like a changing of the guard within the Dodger clubhouse this year, like Justin Turner no longer in it, right? Cody Bell, like all these faces that were ingrained in the team and the community are now with other teams. And so your two superstars are leading the way. And the second thought is user were comfortable. That has kind of been, from a baseball standpoint, the biggest takeaway for me being in my first year with the team, watching those two guys every single day. The reason why I think, or a huge reason why they are who they are in this game, is because they are so comfortable in who they are as baseball players, right? And like, I think that's, in a way, we can't relate to their level of talent within baseball. What I think we can all sort of relate to that as humans, like trying to find our voice, who we are as people, our routines, what works for us. And that's a struggle. Like for some of us, it's like a never ending journey. You're trying to search for those things that make you good at what you do. They have found it and they don't stray from it. They're just so machine like in how they go about every single day. And it's like, oh yeah, that's why they're two perennial MVP candidates. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that they are just fully settled in to being Dodgers now. And I mean, I think that's helped them even more than they typically do as all-stars in this game.
So the vibe I get from Dodgers fans on the internet, and, you know, you can believe everything you see on the internet, so I have no concerns about that.
Totally.
The vibe that I get is there's really two camps. There's the, holy God, look at this juggernaut again. This is amazing. And then there's the other end of the spectrum, which is none of this matters because the pitching is not good enough to compete in October. Right?
Yeah.
This is all cute and fun and, like, these games are great and Mookie and Freddie are awesome, but are we really going to roll into October with this group in the rotation? Where is your concern level on that spectrum?
Not as high, and I don't say that because the Dodgers write my checks now. It's just more like a philosophical viewpoint for me, where it's like, you know, this is baseball. Like, this in the grand scheme, this doesn't really matter to me. But that's a like an existential conversation for another day. I will say it's been fascinating to see, and this is not just Dodger fans on the internet. I think this is the whole of baseball world watching this team. I think the goalposts have moved for this team as the year has gone along. I think after the offseason, it was like, they punted on the offseason. They are gearing up for 2024, right? Say they've let all these guys go out the clubhouse. This is going to be a transition year for the Dodgers. And for a couple months, people are like, see, look, 500, they're not even, they're in third place in the division. You know, their time's done. Transition year happening. And then.
What even is a Diamondback?
I feverishly Google, like, it's what kind of snake is that? And now that they're 12 games up in the division, now the conversation and the tenor of Dodger talk is, here we go again. But it's like, no, that this was not supposed to happen in your eyes. So I think that's sort of interesting to me. Look, they have the fifth most starts by rookie pitchers this year. They have, I believe, the most games lost to the injured list of any staff in baseball. So with those two things in mind, the numbers that we are seeing make sense. Like, this is, you're supposed to see young pitchers go through growing pains. And when young pitchers are not going, and veterans struggling are not going deep into games, you're going to have to use your bullpen more. And when your bullpen is used more, their numbers, you know, they're going to go up too. So this shouldn't be that baffling. When you take a look at the full context of the year.
Yeah.
But I don't say all that to dismiss the forecasting concerns about the staff in October. There are a lot of ifs, right? If Julio Urias returns and maintains Cy Young candidate form, if Clayton Kershaw remains healthy.
If the duct tape works.
Yeah. Right. So I do give, you know, Dave Roberts and his staff a ton of credit. They have had to use, you know, duct tape to kind of, you know, patchwork this staff together and keep it together. They've lost the, you know, key bullpen pieces.
So let me interject for a second. Yeah. For folks who don't follow the Dodgers closely, yeah, I am going to read out their injured list. Okay, this pitching staff on the injured list is probably a top 10 group in the league. Rotation: Bueller, Tony Gonsolin, Michael Grove, and Dustin May are all on the IL. Solid. That's a pretty good starting rotation. Okay. Bullpen. Yency Almonte, who was incredible last year. Tyler Sear, J.P. Fireisen, Daniel Hudson, Joe Kelly, Shelby Miller, Jimmy Nelson, Alex Reyes, Blake Treinen. That's probably like a top 10 bullpen in the league, right? Like, that's the IL, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it's not as if the Dodgers woke up in April and were like, this is the plan. You know what I mean? Like, well, things are gone awry.
And but to your point, like, that's, we're not even counting Kershaw, who's just kind of like a constant concern. All due respect, that's just kind of the place he's at right now, right? And so that is the delicate situation. I will say, like, that's why you mentioned all those rookie starts that they've had and have arguably been somewhat disappointing outside of Bobby Miller, who I'm all in on. I think he's looked great recently. But, like, I know it's not E-Rod, but, like, the Lynn and Yarbrough additions are a huge deal. Like, they needed innings so badly, let alone how well they've thrown. And so, like, those, I know people kind of poo-pooed those as ultimately the deadline additions on the pitching staff, but I thought those were massive trades. And I think that we've seen already how helpful those guys have been.
Totally. And again, goalpost move. At the time, people like Lance Lynn, he's given up the most home runs in the league. He's the highest ERA in baseball. Yeah, but
I understand why people said that, but, like, if you were not, if you're actually surprised that he, now sure, did I expect him to dominate this week? No, but, like, this is so obvious. Yeah.
Yeah. The progression to the mean, right? Yes. Was something you could forecast. You take him out of a losing situation. You drop any player in a winning situation, that's going to give wind in their sails. Totally. And then Ryan Yarbrough, like, given how effective he has been as this chameleon pitcher in his career, and how vocal he's been about wanting to start but then also excelling at not starting, like, adding somebody like that to your staff, like, it's massive. Now, you know, Bobby Miller, like, they're going to have to monitor his workload. That's just, it's any young pitcher, right? That's going to be a conversation the second half of the year. I think last year he threw 112 innings total. And remember, his season ended early because of shoulder trouble. And that delayed the start of this year. And so he's already at 96 innings between, you know, the major leagues and a brief stint in AAA or in the minors before he was called up. So, like, that's going to be a thing. And so that's why I circle a name like Ryan Pepiot for being huge down the stretch. He was going to break camp as the fifth starter. And then an oblique injury shut him down. He didn't debut until July 14th. And so for him, it's, you know, given that workload ramp up, you know, for most young pitchers at spring training, then you get the first half, then the second half is the concern. Well, this is his ramp up in first half right now. So he could be a huge, huge arm for them down the stretch. So I'm really looking forward to see what Pepiot brings to the table.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good name and kind of good note to kind of end on, because what's fascinated me about the Dodgers is just, like, we assume that they still have this great farm system and you can rely on. Now, Bobby Miller was one of the best pitching prospects in baseball, so you could sort of count on that. But, you know, those other guys, some due to injury, some due to performance, have just not quite delivered on both sides of the ball, right? Like, I love Michael Bush. He hasn't really done it. Miguel Vargas, he hasn't really done it, right? We saw Sheehan and Grove and Stone. Like, those guys have not really delivered in the way that I think people were counting on in terms of depth. But one of them will. At least one or two of them will start to show up when they need them the most, I'm sure. And again, it's not like they've had trouble anyway. So it's you know, winning games regardless. So that is a good reminder of just how important depth is. And as you said, you could see it behind the scenes, just why they're going to keep winning. Because that is the operation. It's almost foolproof. Like, the floor is so, you mean not just the vibes, but, like, the performance floor is so high. Because that's just this operation they've set up.
Right. I think that is why, like, it's been a decade why it continues, is because it's not just buying wins or buying stars at the major league level. They are scouting, drafting, developing, signing players to make sure that the cupboards are always full. And even though I think they're what, seventh now on pipeline rankings. That's because a lot of those guys who are still prospects, like they're still young guys, they've graduated, but they're still there. The Vargases, the Emmett Sheehans, like they're still technically prospects, even though they're technically not prospects, but they still are, you know what I mean? So it's just wave after wave. And that's what I think every team should aspire to be like. You know, like,
it's not that simple, though. The Mets, that's the thing. Like, Steve Cohen can say he wants to be like the Dodgers, but it takes so much. And I think what you sort of alluded to, it takes so many people that you don't see. There's not one GM you can hire that makes this possible. Like, this takes so long to get to.
Yeah.
Steve Cohen saying that he wants to be like the Dodgers, at least it's better than Jerry Reinsdorf saying he wants to be like the Royals.
All right. Well, that's
I was looking at you, Jordan, out of my peripheral. I could see Jake, something was brewing and bubbling to the surface. And I thought there's two ways it could go here. But the most likely way is that it's going to be about the White Sox. And sure enough, I thought the other way I thought was going to be like some obscure tie into the Chapman baseball program.
Oh, we'll save that. We'll save the Chapman Panthers talk for after the recording. But we will also spare you the recorded platform of talking about the White Sox coherently. We are going to cut this off here. Steven Nelson, you are outstanding. Thank you so much.
Hey, where can people find your work?
Yeah,
you said like, oh, he does like 1,000. No, now I just do one thing. I just work for the Dodgers.
pretty straightforward. So we just he's on Dodgers games a lot of the time.
My favorite part of one of my favorite stories about working now on the Dodger broadcast. So I fill in for Joe Davis, and so I'm going up the escalator.
Oh, right.
Have you heard of him? He's the voice of the sport. He's incredibly beautiful. So we're going up the escalators at Dodger Stadium, as you guys know, to get to the press.
I know those well, yes.
Yeah. And there's this group of fans right in front of me, and they turn around and they're like, oh, wow, like, Steven, like, oh, it's so great to meet you. Well, one of the friends didn't know who I was. And she said, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, no worries. Like, I don't care at all. And then the friend was like, yeah, he's Joe Davis Jr. So I'm Joe Davis' son now. So that's kind of been a running bit.
That's great. Aren't you and Joe are like, we can say it anyway. I was like, you guys are like roughly the same age, right?
Yeah, he's a year older than
a
me.
A year older.
He might as well be 30. Joe is the oldest 35-6-year-old that you will ever meet in your life. And that's part of his charm.
It's great. We love Joe. We love you. Thank you, Steven Nelson. Enjoy the Dodgers' revenge on the Guardians after Noah Syndergaard took them down. We appreciate it so much. And
they're going to put up 100 runs tonight.
Ahmed Rosario, 7 RBIs. Yes. Cycle. It's coming. Yeah.
Thank you, Steven.
Love you guys.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast for the end of yet another mediocre show. The New York Yankees, speaking of mediocre, are carrying a hefty L9 on their shoulders. Worse than mediocre, Jordan?
They would love to be mediocre. Are you kidding me?
They were mediocre for the first 4 months.
they are aspiring for mediocrity at this point. I mean, that would be a dream come true, because an L9 is the farthest thing from mediocre. First 9-game losing streak for the Yankees since 1982. If they lose a 10th tonight with Luis Severino on the bump, it'd be the first 10-game losing streak.
As in, like, Cy Young?
No, the opposite of that. Cy Young, that's a good award we should give.
S-I-G-H Young.
First 10-game losing streak for the Yankees since 1913, which was the first year they were the Yankees. They had two other 10-game losing streaks as the Highlanders in the 19-aughts or whatever. But yeah.
1913, I believe, was Kenny Williams' second year with the White Sox.
Yes. So it's been a while. Things are not good with the Yankees. However, I'm just going to take
quickly. I know you're about to talk about the youth infusion. Yesterday on the, if you watch the highlight package from their 2-1 loss to the Nats.
Oh, I watched like most of the game live. So I was living.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it starts with Michael Kay, their broadcaster, being like, hoping that there's an infusion of energy and youth. And then it's like, they lose 2-1 and they get two hits and they're both from Ben Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, and like JoJo was effectively wild last night. I think he had more walks than strikeouts. Carlos, the line was good. Didn't look quite as good as we would like to see. I believe he got zero swings and misses on his fastball last night. Now, the Nats don't strike out a lot, so I guess that's something, but not good. L9, Yankees stink. But I'll give you 30 seconds positivity on Everson Pereira, because I don't really know why this guy hasn't gotten more hype. Like, he was their top international signing in 2017. He was a top five player in the class, a 2017 class, which is looking very, very strange in retrospect. I know that's true for all July 2 classes, now January 15th. That's the class that was led by Wander Franco, first and foremost. But it also had Julio, who was like the 12th best prospect in that class, and Ronnie Mauricio, who was like the 15th. And the funny one is the Yankees gave a lot of money to two guys. One of them was Everson Pereira, and one of them was a outfielder named Ramfer Salinas. If you've never heard of him, it's because he hasn't made his past A-ball and he was suspended for PEDs 3 months ago. But Everson Pereira has steadily worked his way up the Yankee system, has put fantastic numbers in the upper minors this year. And most importantly, Jake, he is a real live actual outfielder who plays outfield. And the Yankees, for whatever reason, have struggled to find one of those in recent years. And so just him playing left, and he threw a guy out at second, like, Yankees fans were like, this guy's amazing. But I like Pereira. I think he's going to help them be a little bit more watchable this season. So I'm excited.
I would say the two words why he hasn't gotten more hype are Estevan Florial.
Yeah.
There's a similar issue with, like, is he too much swing and miss in the bat, where he has a lot of raw juice and he's a really good athlete? That's just what I've heard from people around the Yankees. Like, there is a bit of like Estevan Florial trauma.
That's true. I don't know. I'm more optimistic. I think that the hit tool is a little better here. He's been more consistent. Florial has fluctuated a lot more. But I hear that. I'm trying to give them any reason to turn the freaking game on. I mean, my God, this has been so bleak. So good for Pereira, good for the Yankees. I hope the season's dead, but maybe he can give them some hope for next year.
Speaking of bleak, may I direct your attention to Anaheim, California.
Yeah. So
Mike Trout. Yeah. So last week we did a draft where we took the most bummery things in baseball. And you took Mike Trout because he had to watch. He basically had to watch his friends die.
Yeah. Know? I'm trying to see. I'm going to check while you're talking. Like, how far back were they when he got hurt?
So Mike Trout.
Yeah.
Mike Trout came back last night, which is great. We love when Mike Trout plays baseball.
Love it.
Need him to get to 100 WAR. That's a must. He's at 85. He'll get there. I'm not worried. Just a little worried.
Not worried. Yeah.
Good to have Mike Trout back. They lost anyway, because that's what the Angels do. And Jordan, I have a theoretical question for you about Shohei Ohtani.
Oh, about Shohei Ohtani. All right. Yep.
So the Angels are now, what is it, 9 games out for the wild card?
Yeah, they were 7 games out of first. When Trout got hurt. Sorry, 6 games out of first place when Trout got hurt. Now they are, 10 games out of the wild card. 10
back of the third wild card spot, okay?
Yes.
So it's not, let me just say this, it's not good.
No. Nope.
They are 10 back, and just for reference, okay, the Pirates are 8.5 back. Just want to give everyone that context here. Shohei Ohtani, who the Angels did not trade at the deadline, will be an Angels employee for the remainder of the season unless the Angels DFA him. Okay. Let's say Artie Moreno wakes up today and says, all hope is lost. Fuck this. I'm selling the team. I don't want to pay Ohtani the remainder of Ohtani's salary this year. It's not worth the money or the whatever. Let's DFA him. And just, we're going to blow it all up. Lose as many games as we can. Get the first pick. Whatever. Okay. Ohtani hits waivers.
Yeah.
Okay. which team is going to pick Ohtani up off of waivers?
Right.
Because the Oakland A's, so the way waivers works is it is opposite of record.
Yeah, right? And record I think flip. It's changed in terms of it used to be the other league gets priority. Yeah, I think that's changed, but let's just focus on the order at the bottom right.
Correct. So the Oakland A's are sure as shit not picking Ohtani up off of waivers.
They would truly go out of business if they had to pay Ohtani for
So Jordan, my question to you is, in a couple months, every team in baseball is going to be trying to swoon Shohei Ohtani. However, any team would take him. However, over the next 2 months, month and a half, are there any teams that would not take him? Who's the first to take him?
Oh, who would not take him or who would take
him? Well, I'm just saying, like, who's the first team in the order that's like, yep, we'll take Shohei
Ohtani? Colorado. Not even a question. I don't even think it would be about convincing him to stay, but... Again, like the Rockies' attendance has at least started to suffer this year, and I don't know how many home games they have left, but like Colorado would do it so fast. I don't even think so? That would – yeah. Because I got Tankathon up, right? If we're going backwards, then we got White Sox, which would be really funny. Cardinals is a very interesting one, right? Could the Cardinals' way seep into Ohtani's, you know, bloodstream – by the time he leaves at the end of September.
Could you imagine Ohtani spending the final 2 months of the season, month and a half of the season, in St. Louis?
Right. I mean, damn. They would be one of the most fun. That lineup would be unbelievable to watch.
The reason that they're not doing it is because it's like they need to give Jordan Walker at-bats.
No, I know. They can't be taken away from the youth. And I guess you could apply that to some of the other bad teams.
But you're right about the Rockies. They're so detached.
There's no shot he's getting past... the Rockies. Just absolutely no way. But that's a good hypothetical. All right. A couple more super quick hits before we say goodbye. Jake, the Mariners signed Luke Weaver. Do you know why I care about this?
No.
No, you don't. So as someone who's been going to Reds games a lot, I have watched a lot of Luke Weaver this season. And what Luke Weaver has been this year for the Reds before they DFA'd him last week is, I wish I had the specifics. I was going to do this for Ugla at some point. The worst first inning pitcher of all time. He had like a 15 ERA in the. You think Severino's bad. Luke Weaver was just shockingly awful in the first inning. And then like kind of okay after that, which is weird. He had this weird run where his ERA was 10 over like 3 months. And the Reds won like every game because they kept coming back in games he was starting. He was getting historic run support. It was the most bizarre thing ever. But I love this move because the Mariners actually claimed Luke Weaver at the beginning of last offseason. And I was like, oh, great. Jerry just wants another former first round pick. They'll put him in the bullpen. He'll be amazing. He ends up getting DFA'd, ends up on the Reds because they're the only team that wants to let him start. He starts for the Reds. He sucks for 21 starts. They DFA him. And now I cannot wait for him to go into the Mariners bullpen lab. They tell him, hey, just throw this pitch and you'll be great. He's great. And I can't wait for 2 weeks from now when the Mariners are in Cincinnati that Luke Weaver comes out of the bullpen in the seventh and stymies a bases loaded jam. It will be glorious. I'm so sure it is going to happen.
As long as the Mariners don't use him as an opener in the first inning, well, he'll be fine.
But this is the other funny part. Is like, well, if he's sure you can move him to relief, but if the first inning is the problem, is he just going to come in and give up four home runs? I don't know. We're going to find out. There's no reason to doubt the Mariners pitching apparatus at this point. So excited about that one. The Giants signed Paul DeJong after his 3-for-50 stint with the Blue Jays. Was he there in Philadelphia last night?
No.
No. Okay.
Hilarious. Did they announce it yet, the Giants?
I believe so, but maybe they haven't. Maybe they haven't made the official move yet. Because the Mariners announced Weaver, but maybe they haven't. It seems like the Giants are going to sign Paul DeJong. I don't know if they've announced it.
They are signing Paul DeJong. Yeah. It was the type of situation where everyone was like, "All right, hey, Gabe, are you Gabe Kapler? Are you going to sign Paul DeJong?" And he was like, off the record, it's in motion.
In motion. Yes. So Paul DeJong, very weird season. I think people were surprised. Oh, my God, the Blue Jays, they DFA Paul DeJong. Like, that was their trade guy. Remember, the Blue Jays had no intention of trading for Paul DeJong before Bobichek got hurt. So it's like they were just kind of undoing. Bobichek got back, like it was fine. David Schneider and Espinal are doing just fine. So that wasn't surprising. But hey, maybe the Giants can get DeJong. It's weird though because DeJong, like, he's so streaky. I guess they're hoping that it's kind of like a JD Davis situation. Whatever JD Davis was doing, you're kind of hoping Paul DeJong can find that. But Weird.
Gabe Kapler said something hilarious yesterday during the pregame press conference. So, hi, everybody. I'm in Philly right now for the Phillies Giants series.
You were there for the walk-off last night.
I was there for the walk-off last night. I should probably tweet that I'm at baseball games more. Anyway, Kapler said something freaking hilarious and interesting in bananas yesterday, and I'm going to use it as my ugla. So stay tuned for Friday.
Okay, great. So we will get that on Friday. But until then, thank you all for listening. Thank you to Steven Nelson for talking to us about the Dodgers. And thank you to Chris Tyler for producing. As always, you can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com, BARBcast. And we'll be back. That is a lot of news for a Tuesday into Wednesday show. So we'll see what we have for Friday. But until then, enjoy the rest of the week. We'll see if the Mariners keep winning and the Yankees keep losing. We'll talk to you on Friday.
SiriusXM Podcasts.